I've had plenty of time to think about being a Christian and eternity in the last couple of weeks. Had a family friend, the father of some friends of mine, died last week. Went to a funeral yesterday of a friend I graduated from high school with. Missed one in the afternoon for another father of a friend of mine, and then went to a visitation last night for the father of a friend of mine. So plenty of opportunity to start putting that in perspective. And while at the funeral, the chaplain who did the funeral, from the recorder, but did they train Baptist preachers to laugh and joke like that? Because I really wanted him to quit. I really, really wanted him to quit. But he did say, and he was a spiritual man, but he wasn't the way I thought it should be. But he did say, he said, this time's coming. It's coming for you, it's coming for me, it's coming for all of us. And we need to know that. None of us get out of this world alive. And we need to stop and think about what that means. And of course, I'm sitting there feeling fairly certain that my friend had not lived the way the Bible says, although I think she lived what we would call a good moral life here on this earth. But it's a serious time to reflect on the fact that this is a very temporary home, and we're supposed to treat it as a temporary home and supposed to be glad that it's a temporary home. Now, I don't know about you, but I have trouble with that one, because this is the only home I know. This is all I know. And Stan said the other day that it took him a while to learn to appreciate when heaven talks about peace and rest. And I remember that so well. I remember as a young person thinking, oh, that doesn't sound very good. And you have to get older before you know that rest sounds like a really good thing. But anyway, I've just had a lot of opportunity in the last few days to really think about the life past this one and what it means for us and how fortunate and how blessed we are to have that hope. And there are so many people who don't have it and know they don't have it. I mean, there are a lot of people who believe they're going to be with God, but there are a lot of people that think there's nothing there. It's just over when it's over. And I think when I mull on how quickly this life goes, and that's it, that's all there is, those people have to be incredibly sad. They have nothing to hold on to, and I feel bad for them. I hope they can find it. Anyway, that was totally off the topic, but has been on my brain a lot. We're in chapter 7, page 62, and I've really kind of been waiting for this one. What do you communicate to your neighbor? Because I think we are very aware, for the most part, of what we communicate to our children, our spouse, our friends here. I think we are less aware about what we're communicating to the world around us. Kate got into a Facebook thing, which she does on more occasions than I think she should, but this one I don't think was her fault. She was just talking about how marriage is different from what people call long-term relationships. And actually, she wasn't even saying you shouldn't do that, it's bad. She was just saying, this is a different world. I never realized what a different world this is. And she was involved with somebody for 3 years, so she had some experience with that longer-term thing. And she got pretty blasted by a bunch of people. Now, I was proud of the way she handled it, because I think she did all right with that. But what she was communicating to the outside world was, marriage is different. Marriage is sacred. Marriage is not like any other relationship. And the world didn't like hearing it, because they saw that as a blast against them. And I hear it from students all the time, we're just as good as married. No, you're not. Married is married, and there's nothing else like it. It's separate, it's different, and no other relationship is like that. And students will say, well, you know, we live together and we share everything, blah, 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 so we're just like married. And as an instructor, I can't say all the things I want to say, but I want to say things like, even practical everyday things. Is your money in the same bank account? Is he on your signatory for health insurance? issues? You know, does he get to decide what happens to you that way? Are you invited to the family photos when those are all going on? It's not the same.
Does he share his name with her?
Right.
Excuse me, there used to be some statistics when people first began to cohabit like they do now, commonplace, that once they married, most of the time, or a lot of the time, within a year or two, they divorced.
It's still true. The statistics are still there that people who cohabit have a much higher divorce rate than people who do not. And there's a lot of speculation as to the why of that. But I think the most important reason is when you've had people who cohabit, you have people who are not willing to commit to a relationship. And once they marry, a lot of them go, wait, I didn't want to be committed to this person. I didn't want to take on that in sickness and in health thing, better or worse thing. And while certainly a lot of marriages end in divorce, there are still barriers to ending that relationship, even if you decide you want to end it. Legally, ethically, morally, your friends and family, you know, are going, why are you doing this? So there's still a lot of societal support for a marriage to keep it together. But anyway, my point is she was communicating a value that she holds, and the world didn't like it. And she got a lot of flack from her friends. And they're insulted because they want to believe that their relationship is the same. And I told her, I said, well, for a lot of them, they're jealous that it's not, because women overall, not every single one, but women overall want to marry. It's within us to want to have a home and to build that relationship. And so these young women who are in these, quote, long-term relationships where he has no interest in being married are frustrated. So they like to say, well, it's the same as being married, when it's not. So we communicate to our neighbors, to the world, all the time. The issue is, are we paying attention to what we're communicating to them? If we talk to our friend who's not a Christian about something that's going on in the church, how is that helpful to any of us? Is it helpful to them in teaching them about Christ? Or does it put a slant on it that maybe they're going to go, well, I don't think I want to be with those people? I mean, it may have not even just been a wash. It may have been negative. It may have been something you've done now to keep them from wanting to learn what's being taught. Is it good for the people at the congregation that don't even know you're talking about? No. Because you've harmed their influence. Is it good for you? Does it make you feel better, stronger, more in tune with Christ? No, there's nothing to be gained from that. So she starts out by saying it would be extremely difficult to be the wife of the president. And I agree, for many, many reasons. She has to watch her every word and action, for she's continually on public display. Yet a Christian's actually in this same position. In the Sermon on the Mount, Christ described us. Would you read that, Amy? Matthew 5:14.
You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden.
And it says nowhere else is our light more visible than among our neighbors. And I think we forget that. We're just going about our life, and we forget the influence that we could have. We don't think we do influence. I hardly know her. Well, but she knows you come down here to this building. Or, you know, she knows your children have said that they go to church. So I think that's the biggest danger, is forgetting that people are watching. Doesn't mean we can be perfect in the way we live our lives, but it certainly means we should be trying. And cognizant of when we've made a mistake. I've got something that happened that I can't correct, and it troubles me. I wish I could correct it. I think I've corrected it with the Lord, but I can't correct it with the person because it was a passing person, somebody I don't know, and I can't find them and fix it. And so I think we have to be aware all the time of our behavior, and we can't let being tired or being irritated or being any of those other things. Come on, I said, it's pretty hard sometimes. We went to 5 grocery stores last Saturday because I hadn't done shopping in a while, and we were using the coupons. That's wearing. It makes you tired. And it's real easy by the end of that, the line's long or somebody does something that's irritating, to snap at them. That's not right. Even if you don't know them, even if they're never going to know who you are, the thing is you don't know if they're ever going to know. I live in a pretty small town, and it's pretty easy for people to find things out about other people.
Anyway, God knows.
God knows it. That's right. At church, we're usually on our best behavior. And away from home, we probably go unnoticed by the majority of the people we pass. But when we go home and let our hair down, our neighbors are all around us watching. And because they know we profess to be Christians, they'll be watching carefully. Someone once wrote, every action of our lives touches on some chord that will vibrate in eternity. That's very scary to me. But it really is true. At one of these funerals that I went to, a lady about my age came. She's a little younger than me, graduated a little bit after I did. But we had been in high school together. So that's a long time ago. 43 years, something like that. And she said, how's your mother doing? And I said, she's doing really well. This was not a person I was a friend with. I was friendly, but she wasn't a friend that was at my house or anything. And I kind of wondered how she knew. She said, she made a Valentine's dress for me. And it was just beautiful, and it was prettier than anything I could have bought. And I'm thinking, 43 years later, and she remembers a Valentine dress. So how much more, if we speak sharply to someone, or if we hurt someone's feelings, or if we ignore someone who needs something, how much longer will that stay in their memory?
Forever.
Yeah. And I think we have the responsibility to, I'm off subject here a little bit, that if someone has harmed us and then they've made it right with us, we have to work hard, I think, to get past that human feeling of still feeling it. You know, and it's hard sometimes to let go of those things. I always say that I've been blessed with a bad memory, and I don't remember when people hurt my feelings. If it's gone on a while, I'm past it. I don't remember it. But we have to let go, and it's not always easy to do that. And if you get into a situation with a neighbor, it can be even more difficult because maybe they're not a Christian and they're not working hard to do that. You know, it's just a situation, they don't care. So then it becomes our job to go past what we think is fair. It's not fair that I should have to do this. I've already done blah, blah, blah. Well, what did the Lord tell us about forgiving people? How many times? 70 times 7. So we have to get past the human part. A sobering thought, but it should pervade everything we do. Mother, read Romans 14:7, please.
For not one of us lives for himself, and none one dies for himself.
You know, people think Shakespeare came up with that, no man is an island. He didn't. We don't live on our own. We don't die on our own.
What was that scripture?
Romans 14:7. Our neighborhood provides the perfect practice field. Patsy, did you have 1 John 3:18?
My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth.
So what does that mean?
It's not what you say, it's how you treat people.
Right. Now, we have to say nice things, too.
Well, yeah.
But it's not enough.
We can't just say, go forth and be clothed.
Right.
We got to be right. Helpful with the clothes.
Yeah. Good luck there. Have a great day.
Don't be hungry anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't be hungry. Mary, James 2:8.
If you really fulfill the law, the royal law, according to the scripture, you will love your neighbor as yourself. You do well.
So we fulfill the royal law by treating others the way we treat ourselves. And I don't know about you, but I'm not going to be too cold or too hot or too hungry or too tired anytime I can fix it. And I think we have to think about that. And we've talked about this recently in class, about not how do we know? How do we know what our fellow Christians need? How do we know what the people in the world need? brag on Amy and Michael a little bit. There's a gentleman at their congregation who's been out of work a long time, and she said he keeps thinking he's going to get this next job, and, you know, it's fallen through. And he came over and did some plumbing work for him and told him the cost, and they had already set aside more than that because they wanted to help him. She was talking about it to me, and she said, you know, he said, no, no, no. And she said, I told him this was our plan. This was what we knew we were going to do. And if we can afford, she said, we just went to the stock show. So if we can afford to entertain ourselves, then we certainly can afford to help a brother who needs the help. And I was very proud of her. She's only 27 years old, and I think that's some pretty mature thinking that, yes, we are grateful for the things we have, and it's okay to have things and do things, but it's not okay to do all that at the expense of everyone else that we know or should care about. Luke 10:27.
So he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.
He goes on to point out that that's not a new commandment, Bonnie. Leviticus 19:18.
You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord.
This is not a new feeling that God had when he sent his son. He's always expected us to love our neighbors as ourselves. Now, did I miss something? Does it say if you have a really good neighbor and a nice person, love them as yourself? Yeah, didn't say that. I had a really nasty neighbor one time. Really nasty neighbor. Told me when I'm very young, had my two cats because I didn't have any kids. Love my cats like they were my kids. He said, if they get on my property, I'll shoot them. Those were the first words he ever said to me when we moved into the neighborhood. Really nasty man. And one of my cats did go missing, and I'm absolutely certain that he killed her. Very hard to think about loving that man in any form, much less as myself. I don't know that I did a very good job at it. Maybe I'd be a little better at it now with some years of experience on me. But I don't think people can appreciate good neighbors till they've had a really bad one and know what that's like. He lived up at kind of the top of the hill of this little subdivision we lived in, and some people down here wanted to sell their house. It was out in the country. And he put a big sign on the back of his barn that said, future home of the Hillcrest Hog Farm. Well, truthfully, you couldn't have hogs in the area. You could have horses, but you couldn't have hogs. So that every person that came to buy that house, look at that house, saw that.
He was a deep thinker.
Nasty man. But it was still my job to love him. Challenging. Cain was branded and cursed when he callously scoffed, am I my brother's keeper? Lord said, where's your brother? Am I my brother's keeper? Now, first of all, he's talking to God. And I just don't even know what was in his head at that point in time, because it's just like a teenager. Did you clean your room? What do you think? It's just that same kind of back talk, and he's doing it to God. Did not have good consequences for him. Old Testament books are specific on how to treat neighbors because they have all those very specific laws, and of course we're not under those laws, but aren't we looking at the mind of God and seeing how he would consider these things?
Aren't they sort of examples?
The Old Testament's sort of, I'm trying to find, to bring us to Christ.
Schoolmaster, school teacher.
Schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. Okay, so then she starts talking about, I'm so busy. And I like this sentence. Can you imagine Paul living next door to people for over a year not even knowing their name? That's hard to imagine, isn't it? Maybe. But given who he was and how eager he was to spread the word, I kind of doubt that. And on my street, I live on this little horseshoe street that we always used to say nobody should be on except the people that live there and the pizza guy, because there's no reason to get into that street. And I used to know everybody there. But over time, people have moved, new people have moved in. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't know half of them. And actually, we've been talking about as soon as the nice weather hits, we're going to do a yard thing and invite everybody and try to get to know our neighbors. Because I can wave at them. I know their car. Hi. You know, but I don't know them. And I'm missing opportunities. I'm missing opportunities. Can you imagine the Apostle John yelling at his neighbor's children because they were making too much noise? Mother's next door neighbor, nice people, nice kids. But for some reason, and we don't know why, because they've lived there for, what, 10, 12 years, something like that? And for some reason, he got it in his head that she didn't want the kids playing in her yard. Now, mother never said that, and the kids were always welcome to come over. And he was getting the kids out of their yard. And she was outside, and she said, I don't care if they play in the yard. Because the yard's...
I finally one day just walked up to him. He was working outside. I said, call him by name. I said, we need to talk. And I said, I've got an impression that you think your children are being a nuisance to me. And I said, I love kids. Work with kids all my life. They're not bothering me at all. If you leave them alone, and I leave them alone, or we'll work out our own things, they can play in my yard. He said, well, you keep it tonight. I thought you wouldn't want them walking on it. I said, have a yard you can't walk on?
And the kids love Mother.
Oh, yeah. The kids are my friends.
So,
and he just got it in his head that they were being a nuisance. Nothing I said, because I never say anything.
Yeah. But you do keep a really nice yard.
Well, I used to. That was when I had energy.
But it is often hard to not lose your temper a little when they come over and pull off the heads of every one of your daffodils.
Yeah, that would be a little harder.
But you know, these kids never did that.
No, it was just like chasing a ball that went into her yard or something, you know. Just
yeah, they had a basketball, and
well,
I think
know,
he thought...
You always have children around.
Yep. Yeah.
It have to be.
There's worse things.
Absolutely.
I was the mother of the child.
You're right, that's worse.
This is neat. Okay, I went, oh no, where'd they come from?
Well, they didn't, you know, if they had pulled them and taken them into their mommy and said, look, I got you a bouquet, it'd been, or brought them to me, I'd been different.
Oh, no,
but they just pulled them off and threw them out.
No.
Well, I would correct these children if they really did something wrong.
Well, but
in a nice way, but...
But they did that while I was at work, and I came home and found it. Like they scatter rose petal. I had daffodils.
Oh, man. Well, I have some neighbors that I've had for years and years, and they're good people, and they love me, and I love them, and they would do anything for me, and vice versa. Their house is awful. Awful is the best word I can come up with. And they have all these dogs. They have a fence, but the lots where I live slope. So the fence slopes, the dog just walks up to the high part and walks over the fence. And, you know, they're constantly in my yard. And they used to have about 30 cats. And people would say to me, you have so many cats. I go, no, I have one cat. See, that cat right there, he's mine. All those cats belong over there, but they're on the car and they're on the front porch. And it's really difficult because I would never do anything to hurt their feelings because I love them. But I don't want those dogs in my yard running through the garden. And that's where they go, down to the lake. So, you know, actually Roger has been very, very good with this situation, better probably than I, because I tend to just try to ignore it, try not to think about it. And he's gone out of his way to become friends with the husband and help him do some things. And I just want to scream and say, clean up your yard. But my job is to be a good neighbor and to care.
You know, in terms of that, I have driven through some neighborhoods, and this is my take on it. You see one yard that just looks really bad, and I go, what kind of ill, elderly person lives in that house, and why don't the neighbors go and mow his lawn?
Right, right.
Come to my neighborhood and speak about that.
Uh-oh.
Get somebody over there doing my yard.
Baloney. Roger has actually, he's done that. He's mowed. He's done things better than I have. Better than I have. Because I just get annoyed. And yet I actually know some of the issues that go on that cause some of this. So yeah. The one time he used to drive a truck, like a truck, and he'd park it in his driveway. We're not really supposed to park those things in the neighborhood driveway. And I had a guy down the street that is one of the few original neighbors called me. He said, I need you to sign this petition against them so we can turn it into the city. I said, you've known me all these years. You know Dion's my friend. I'm not signing that petition. He said, do you like that truck sitting next to your house? I said, nope, sure don't. But I'm not signing that petition. I'm not going to do it. And he said, well, somebody told me you would, and I thought that was odd. Because he knows we're friends. And it's back when my name was Anderson. I said, there's some other Andersons up on the cul-de-sac. I guess that's who they were talking about. But I'm not signing it. So I don't think it ever made its way to the city. But
this lesson is really pricking my conscience because I've been one of those living in a neighborhood for a year and a half and maybe met four of my neighbors. But in Florida, we had a situation kind of like you're talking about children coming in your yard being destructive. We had two little boys in the neighborhood who, when we moved there, Ben was not quite six. These boys were like 2 and 3 and were totally unwatched all day long.
Wow.
They were at our house all day. Mom didn't know where they were. She never even met me, you know, and her kids would be at my house all day. We'd see them in the neighborhood across from, like they had to cross a main street. They were in the neighborhood over there unsupervised. So even though they were growing into the neighborhood brats and nobody was allowing them around, I felt like if we don't let them play here,
yeah, where are they going to be?
Who has them and what are they doing? So I let them play at our house a lot, but they started destroying things, you know, taking Christmas lights and ripping them up. And I mean, they were angry little boys. Mm-hmm. And they were just doing more and more bad things, taking my neighbor who lived next door to me, she was an elderly lady, and they were taking her oranges off her tree and baseball batting them across the street, and then telling me, well, we took the ones that were on the ground. And I said, no, there's nothing like the smell of a fresh orange that's just been picked. You can't beat that smell. And I said, that is a fresh orange. I know the difference. I said, do not lie to me. Well, it got so bad that I finally had to tell the boys they couldn't play at my yard anymore either. Mm-hmm. And I had to go down and tell the mom why. And, you know, that was the first time I met her. Mm-hmm. I'd lived in the neighborhood for probably 6 years by then. And I had to tell her, your boys are not welcome at my house anymore, and this is why. And that was the worst thing I've ever had to do.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But we had a similar situation in our neighborhood here with a petition. As soon as we moved in, we weren't even married yet. They're wanting us to sign a petition against the original builder and all this junk. And we're like, whoa, this is a violation of constitutional rights. We don't want any part of this. Well, that has been what has estranged us from our neighbors because everybody else is on the bandwagon signing this except for us. So I don't know how to fix that.
Yeah. And you may not be able to. All we can do is try. If they're unwilling for the situation to be fixed, we can't make that happen. We can only be responsible for our behavior. That's all we can do. So, what image do you communicate in your neighborhood? Are you known as the grouchy lady that doesn't like children getting her flowers? Or the smiling one in whose yard the children love to play? In an emergency, now I like this question. In an emergency, would your neighbor, not just the one you particularly like, but the other one, think of you first? Probably not for me, and I need to fix that. I need to be able to work home all day. I mean, we're not most days, but we are. We're available to be home all day. We should be available to help people if they need that help. Next page, 64. If anyone offend not in word, neighbors are sort of like family. Sometimes we feel we can slack up. We're used to each other. You know, the neighbors you know well. Sometimes we do the same bad thing that we do with family. We think we don't have to be as nice because we know them so well. If what I'm tempted to say to a neighbor might hurt my chances of talking to her later about her soul, probably best left unsaid. If I haven't learned anything over the years, I have learned a little to stop before I speak. Now, that was a hard lesson for me because I wanted to share my opinion with everyone about everything. And that's not the most prudent way to live a life. So I've learned. Something happened the other day, and I was very annoyed. I was texting Roger about it. And he said, well, I need to come get you to the hospital. Sew up those holes in your tongue. I said, no, I'll be all right. I can do it. It says here we should stop and pray before we barge and blurt. That is so good. I like that. Instead of counting to 10, use those 10 words. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. All things. And that means control my temper, which is not an easy thing to do. Remember, your neighbors know you're a Christian. Anyone can be nice when things are going smoothly. That's easy.
By the way, things between me and my neighbor are very smooth.
I know they are. It was a very odd situation because it just kind of came up unprovoked. One day everything was great, and the next day Aaron was going, get out of that yard. What happened? They'll judge your religion, your faith, your commitment, by how you react to the sticky situations. Do all things without murmurings and disputings, that you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life. He's already acknowledging it's a crooked and perverse generation. Nowhere in the Bible does it say, love your neighbors because it's easy. Love your neighbors because they're good, kind, wonderful people. Since it's a crooked and perverse generation, they're out there to get you. There are people whose greatest joy is to take advantage of someone else, to do whatever they want to do in whatever way they want to do it. And we are still charged with being the light of the world. We're still charged to do things without murmurings and disputings. I'm not sure what it would take to cause me to bring a lawsuit against someone. Because I'm not saying I would never. There are legal things that happen that you have to take care of. But I think it would have to be pretty... First of all, I know it would have to be absolutely, totally clear-cut in my mind that this was an illegal activity and I needed to get...
And then, of course, we can if it's one of our
That's
brothers
right.
or sisters.
That's right.
Has to go before the church.
So, and I don't like conflict. I'm willing to do it if I absolutely have to handle something that needs to be handled, but I don't like it. I don't. And I think there are people who take pleasure in it, who like it. Haven't you ever known somebody like that? They just kind of like to stir the pot, just kind of like to keep things rolling. Had a lady that worked for us a long time ago at the CPA firm, and while we got along very well, she wasn't nasty. She did like to just kind of keep things brewing. If she found out something, she'd go tell somebody else just to kind of keep things a little stirred up. I don't know if she thought it was more exciting than working as an accountant, which almost anything would be in my opinion, but you know, she just liked to stir it up. And I don't understand that because I really don't like that. Makes my stomach hurt. Hit them where it hurts. It says the devil knows. He knows the places that work against us. And he uses them. The devil knows that if he can get a neighbor to criticize your child, chances are good you might lose control and strike back. Because that's what we do. We take care of our children. And if somebody says your child did this or this, or worse even, your child acts like, you know, there's not just an event, it's a characteristic. It's very hard to acknowledge that there are those faults. But you know what? Our kids are just people, too. They have their faults. They have their shortcomings, just like we all do. And the best thing we can do as a parent is to help them overcome those shortcomings, not ignore them, so that they continue in that line. If you strike back, the devil knows chances are excellent that the door to converting your neighbor will be nailed shut permanently. If you know your temper's just about out of control, wait until you've cooled down. A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. Their contentions are like the bars of a castle. If you've hurt somebody's feelings, if you've made them angry, it's very, very hard for them to forget that and go to a clean slate. And that's just anyone. We all have to do that. Put on your walking shoes. Perhaps one of the most practical teachings concerning our dealings with our neighbors is the religion of the second mile. Now, don't know where this comes from. What was Christ talking about when he says if he wants you to carry his cloak, then you do it for an extra mile? Why? What was that about? Roman soldiers were able to conscript you into service for a mile. If they're carrying their stuff and they want you to carry it for a mile under Roman law, you got to carry it. And Christ says, take it that mile and take another mile. Do more. Be more. Offer more. And I think it's easy to say, well, in our world, we just don't have time or we can't do it. But you know what? The world's always been a busy place. Do you really think that people 1,000 years ago had less to do with their time? I'm telling you, they didn't have an electric oven. They wanted to cook something. That involved getting ready to cook something, getting whatever fuel they were going to use. And, you know, even as a few generations back as in my grandparents' era, those women were busy from the moment they opened their eyes till they closed their eyes. And it was mostly about feeding the family and clothing the family.
I can remember visiting my grandmother, and after breakfast, it'd always be in the summer because that's when we could go and visit. And shortly after breakfast, it was take the buckets and go to the garden and gather the food and start making lunch.
Right. Right.
I don't like to cook that well that I only spent 3 hours on the meal.
But
It took that.
And so when we are very busy, but we're busy in very different ways, but we're not more busy, more involved, more important than all the people who've come before us, who had all those same things, and probably were a lot more physically tired than most of us in this world. So to say, I don't have time to do that is a cop-out. We need to make the time. Jesus continues, if any man goes to court to take away your coat, don't resist. Give him your cloak too. You know, when Jesus talks about turning the other cheek, he's quite serious about it. We have lots and lots of examples where he's saying, don't get into that. It's not important. If you don't have a cloak, you don't have a cloak. You have God. You have me. Have eternal life. And it's very easy, particularly I think in the world we live in, to get caught up in the stuff. And I know that I told Roger yesterday, I was out in the garage, and I said, if we die right now, our children are going to walk in. You know what they're going to do? They're going to do this. He said, no, they won't. This is good stuff. I said, no. They'll be mad at us for all the stuff that they have to deal with. And how much money has gone into stuff that maybe I should have been using to help somebody who needed food, who's going through a hard time.
When I moved back to Fort Worth, it was kind of a sudden thing. I rented that apartment, and I mentally placed furniture in it as I was looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and I said, all right, I'm taking this and this and this, and left my children to deal with 3 bedrooms full of, a house full of furniture, mm-hmm. literally, including a mountain of fabric because I sewed, I made quilts all the time. And do you know what? I think I asked Joy to bring me 1 or 2 items. Asked her the other day if I had a teapot because my teeth thing wouldn't go in the hole of the teapots I brought with me. And I don't know, I can't imagine doing that, but that's something I did, you know. And I don't even remember what teapot I was using, because I made loose tea. I've got loose tea all over the place and I can't use it. But things overtake us.
They do. They do. Mm-hmm.
Overwhelm us sometimes.
Yeah. Then Jesus suggests when a man asks to go a mile with him that we should offer to go too. When he asks to borrow, we should not turn away. How would you feel if your neighbor, that you didn't know very well, came over and asked to borrow something? Yeah, maybe you got a big expensive lawnmower and his grass is like here. There's, for most humans, there's a little, don't break it, bring it back, cost me a lot of money, you know, those kinds of issues. But we have to overcome and do what is best. Now, I'll tell you what Roger would do. He'd go, let me just mow that for you, because he's not going to send his lawnmower with somebody, and he would rather mow it himself. So that's a way, you know, you're still helping. But it's talking about our attitude. Are things more important than helping our neighbor? And sometimes they do become more important in our minds. They're not more important. On page 66, slow down and love. This is probably one of the most important pieces of this lesson. If we don't know anything about the people around us, we can't love them in a serious way that helps them. We can, of course, love people even that we don't know, and that we hope they find Christ, that they go to heaven, that, you know, these are good things for them. But to really love our neighbors as ourselves, we have to know them. And like I said, I don't. But I'm about to change that. Good Lord willing, the creek still runs. Next time you make a cake, try doubling the recipe. You can tell this is an older book. Not too many people are making cakes anymore. Taking one over to neighbor you need to get to know better. Don't worry. She'll probably be shocked, but she'll be pleased and impressed. Lots of little things we can do to be better neighbors. And I think for the most of us, and I could be just taking mine, putting on, we say, I just don't have the time. It's because we don't make the time. I'm not afraid to go knock on their door. I'm not worried that they'll slam the door in my face. You know, I don't have all the... I just get busy. Get busy doing my own thing and don't think about it. But then there's that problem, that next paragraph, that can come wandering from house to house. You want to help your neighbor, you want to love your neighbor, you want to teach your neighbor, but you don't want to be a pest to your neighbor. You don't want to be where she, when she sees you at the door, she goes, oh no, there she is again. What am I going to do? And the Bible talks a lot about being idle, spending too much time in other people's business. So it's that balancing act, getting to know people, helping to take care of people, but not intruding into their lives so much that they wish you'd go home. And the idleness of going house to house encourages what?
Gossip.
Very, very damaging thing. And I think we talked last week about people say, well, it's not gossip, it's true. Still gossip. Just because something's true doesn't mean it's valuable to share it with everybody you ever heard. If you knew somebody had been in prison 20 years ago, turned their life around, totally living life, committed to the Lord, it's a truth that they were in prison 20 years ago. Is it right to tell people about that? No, because what does it do?
Hurts What's them.
Purpose?
Hurts their reputation, their influence.
Right. Changes their influence with people and does no good at all. And the purpose, what is the purpose? What is the purpose if you tell something like that?
To tell.
I don't think it's constructive.
No.
Some people just like to tell other people's business, like to have something nobody knows.
The purpose is to feel self-important.
Mm-hmm.
I know something you don't know. Mm-hmm. So what? So what? When I used to work at the CPA firm, we would tell people that we hired, there's only one way to get fired immediately, and that's if you talk about somebody's financial business, because confidentiality is all we have here. That's what the whole reputation rests on. And Weatherford is a small town, and the people that we had working for us often knew the people whose books we were keeping. And I had one friend who worked for us, and that was the hardest thing for her, because we kept books, monthly books on businesses for several people that we all hung out with. It was our social circle. And she was in that as well. And she would see how much money some of these people made who were in professions, and they didn't make that much money. Well, we didn't either. You know, we were keeping books on people who made a lot more money than we ever made. It was very, very hard for her. And I kept telling her, just numbers. Just numbers. Don't even think about it as money. She said, but look how much they make. I said, no, don't look at how much they make. Look whether your credits and debits work out. But it's just numbers. But it was very hard for her to let go of that. And now, she was good on confidentiality. She never talked to anybody except me, and I already knew the numbers. But we did fire a couple of people because they would go out and tell somebody about a tax return or something, and she's down here. That's all right. We're about to finish up anyway. So that whole idea of gossip and telling just because it's true, that doesn't give you a pass.
Jean, you haven't touched on it, but I have a hard time even with fellow Christians sharing things, because one time I told someone in complete confidence something, and it came back to me within an hour.
Oh my!
And I learned very quickly not to keep my mouth shut. Mm-hmm. But it's hard if they're telling you things,
right?
And then there's something you really have on your mind that you need to share,
mm-hmm.
which everybody does. Everybody needs somebody to talk to, and I really thought I could trust her.
That's very disappointing when that happens.
And I was so hurt. I allowed myself to be hurt. I got over it,
mm-hmm.
but it makes me hesitant to confide in people now.
Yeah, but to hold a confidence is an extremely important part of friendship. Mm-hmm. You know, if you tell me something in confidence and I tell someone else, first of all, I've lied to you, mm-hmm. because I've told you that I will keep it in confidence. And secondly, I've broken your trust.
Mm-hmm.
And how are we going to talk about other things, important things, if you don't feel like you can trust me? This same friend really struggled with this kind of thing. She would, I'm an excellent secret keeper. I have a lot of other faults, but that's not one of them. Somebody tells me something, I don't have an urge to tell it, you know. But she would come to my house and look at my calendar. And I don't mean just look at my calendar, study my calendar. And she'd say, I didn't know so-and-so was pregnant. Why are you going to a baby shower? Why didn't you tell me they were pregnant? I said, well, you know, it's their business to tell, not mine.
Not your story.
It's not my story, and I'm not going to tell what's not my story. So we struggled with that over the years. Anyway, slow down and love. Love your neighbor as yourself. That means if we actually do that, we're going to treat people better than we normally do, because we treat ourselves better. I feel like I did almost all the talking today. Sorry. Y'all have to bump it up next time. So we're about in the middle of page 66 for next week.